Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to David Morgan of themorganreport.com. But first, as always, let's check in with Stacy and find out what the frickin' screaming headlines are of the day.
Yes, Max, it's yet another big boom year in 2019. The stock markets are up and gold has been having a good time. Here's a headline from CNBC. Bitcoin investors are running from the crypto to invest in gold this year, says an ETF strategist. Bitcoin's hot streak is well and truly dead. Oh, that's about the 350th declaration of the death of Bitcoin. But the cryptocurrency has not been able to crack above $4,000 in 3 weeks, just 12 months after trading at more than $12,000. I think they mean $20,000. Signs show that Bitcoin investors are moving toward a more traditional commodity, says Jan van Eck, CEO of the Van Eck Associates. I do think that Bitcoin pulled a little bit of demand away from gold last year in 2017, he said. Interestingly, we just pulled 4,000 Bitcoin investors, and their number one investment for 2019 is actually gold. So gold lost to Bitcoin, and now Bitcoin is losing to gold.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting because they're both considered hard money. So as far as going back and forth from one to the other, you know, that's fine. But interestingly, I think that we're at the end of the great experimentation that started in 1971 when America closed the gold window and the world went on a purely fiat currency referring to other fiat currency, infinite regress. And now with Jerome Powell signaling that quantitative easing to infinity is in the cards, and certainly quantitative easing chapter 4 looks like a done deal. It appears as though there will never ever be a reconciliation of the rogue central bank activities of the past 40 years that have given us this wealth and income gap, the social unrest, the asset price inflation, and the destruction of capitalism as we know it, replaced by crony capitalism and the rise of populism and socialism we see now with such politicians in the U.S. as AOC. Cortez is her name, and she's a dynamo, and she's getting huge attention with her socialist policies. That's a direct result of central bank failure, in my view. Stacy.
Yes, Jerome Powell, the head of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank, did say this week, he did indicate that basically QE, quantitative easing, money printing, would continue forever, that there was no reason to unwind it, which does make you ask, in our lifetimes, we remember times when interest rates used to actually be able to be above 7% or 8%. And that was usually a sign of a booming economy. They keep telling us we have a booming economy, and they keep pointing to the stock market and house prices and saying, see, look, they're up. Like, you know, house prices in places like San Francisco have doubled since 2012. So, you know, that's a sign, they say, of a positive booming economy. And yet interest rates are zero. And they say that we're going to keep them there and we're going to keep on printing money forever.
You know, the Forbes 400 list 30 years ago or so, the list of the richest people in America, it used to be dominated by those who inherited their wealth or made money in the property market, real estate. Now it's dominated by people in the stock market, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Warren Buffett. These are all stock market players, and they got rich basically riding the coattails of the free money from the Fed. The huge bailout of 2008 doubled, tripled, quadrupled the worth of these bankers who got bailed out. And had this been a normal economy run by a normal central banker like Paul Volcker back in the 70s, the bad actors would have been forced to go bankrupt. Then we would have seen new banks, new actors, and the capitalism would have prevailed. But we don't have that anymore. We have this idea with the Fed. My point is that the Fed now only looks at one metric. They don't look at labor. They don't look at anything except the stock market. If the stock market's down 5%, they make more money available. That's it. That's the only metric that counts. And it's a recipe for disaster.
Well, it's time now to go to David Morgan of themorganreport.com. I do like to remind people that he was a test pilot, and that means he is very well equipped in his calmness to deal with not only silver investing, but also crypto investing now. David Morgan, what do you think of this argument that once again, Bitcoin is dead and that Bitcoin and gold are basically attracting the same users?
First of all, Bitcoin is not dead. Secondly, what it's done this past year from the high of, 19,000, 20,000. I am pretty good at picking tops. I didn't get it exactly right in Bitcoin, but I did make a comment before the Anarchapoco conference last year, was approximately this time last year, at about $17,000 Bitcoin. I said, if you got a nice profit here, and you're in a strength mode and trading commodities most of my life, you might consider taking some, money off the table. And when I got to the conference, there was a young guy that came up to me, said he sold. He told me the number. I'll keep it confidential, but it was substantial. And he moved the $17,000 Bitcoin into silver. I do think that I'm one for competing currencies. Two, I'm for the market determining which ones are the most viable. There's been a lot of Bitcoin copycats, as we all know. And lastly, there has been a back and forth between gold and Bitcoin and silver and Bitcoin. I think it actually affected the silver market more than the gold market. I could say that for two reasons. One is silver is a smaller market, obviously. But the more interesting part is that silver speculators seem to be more risk, take more risk than the gold investors. So it has played into it. As far as the move from Bitcoin into gold, yeah, that's probably true. But you only really have one. VanEck saying that, can it be proven? Probably not. Bitcoin has got overhead resistance now. People have sold it down for about a year, but it's far from over.
Right. Well, let's get into some other trends here. So looking forward to gold in 2019, with all this quantitative easing and other inane monetary experiments had more of an impact on prices, will it start to catch up to the price, David Morgan?
Yes, Max. I was just finished the gold show up in Vancouver, one of the best retail shows in my view every year. And I said, look, I'm old enough and wise enough, I think, to do the Richard Russell model and let the market tell me. When the market busts through the $1,300 base of the US dollar, basis the US dollar, we are going to be on our way. And 1350 is the real resistance point, meaning that that's a lot of people are stuck at that level. We need to get through that level. And I believe certainly we'll do that this year. So it took four tries to get through the 12 to the 1300 level. It stalled out around the 1295. And the other point to make, which I'm sure that your listeners and viewers are well aware of, is gold looks really crummy in US dollar terms. But I was there in Canada for that 4 days. And if you look at gold in terms of Canadian dollars, you're pretty happy. If you look at gold in terms of Australian dollars, you're pretty happy. So we get this kind of this U.S.-centric view that, this is the only way to observe something. And of course, it's totally false, but that's mostly what I call conditioning or programming.
David, let us talk about the fact that last year, it's reported central banks bought the most gold since 1967, when of course, we were on a global gold standard. So the fact that they're buying 650 tons and they're expected to buy just as much, if not more, this year, is this a de facto gold standard, i.e. they're taking their dollars and perhaps euros and immediately buying gold with this?
Well, I think that's about the best point we can make in our time together. And I wouldn't really call it a de facto gold standard, although in a way it is. I would certainly say it's the start of a run to gold by the central banks. You got to watch what they do, not what they say. And if you go as far as to reach back into, my brain, and you have me on your show, and thank you for that. There was a time when the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, only reported gold holdings of their member banks. They could care less about what their currency holdings were, what their treasury bills were, what the denomination was, if it was T-bills, T-notes, or T-bonds, they could care less. All they measured was what is your gold holdings. Now, it's a private bank again, back to the era I'm talking about. It was actually a public entity. You could own stock in that bank at one time, not anymore, privatized. But that's the real banking system. And the banks all know it, at least at that level of banking, they all know it. So It's a very big tip off. I think it's extremely important to get that news out to everywhere. Certainly when we finish this, I'm going to send this out to as many places as I can, my private list and, you know, my social media, because look, they're signaling loudly and clearly that they know what's ahead requires gold as a hedge, or maybe even as part of the reset, meaning that there may be some kind of tie to gold when the reset happens.
Right. As JP Morgan himself said, only gold is money. Everything else is credit. And the point about these central banks, they settle in gold. And they know that the credit and the IOUs and the funny money that floats around the system isn't really worth anything. And to your point about when this thing gets reset, and it looks like it has to get reset like it was at the Bretton Woods Agreement, as it was at the Plaza Accord, as it has been done a number of times, usually gold is a factor. And let me ask you this about the industry here. Newmont Mining and Goldcorp, that's a merger. You know, we see mergers and acquisitions in this space. Sometimes it's hard to follow because these huge gold mining companies are hedged on their positions. So there's a lot of derivatives on their books. And the industry itself is not always the best supporter of gold price per se. But what do you make of this merger, David Morgan?
Max, I don't like it. To me, it reminds me of the banking industry. It's consolidating more and more power in fewer and fewer hands. And so now if you've got these major conglomerates with what Randgold did with Barrick and now Newmont and Goldcorp, you've really consolidated the industry. And because of that, they have more sway in the market, meaning they can kind of dictate on the physical side, not only the paper side, set the price, et cetera. So I'm not favorable to it. And on your point, Max, to drill down, if we remember way back about the $320 gold level, $320 US, we had the Anglo Ashanti hedge book blow up. And that thing was so complicated and convoluted. They, meaning the company, Anglo Ashanti, needed to get some of the best quants from Wall Street, put them in a room and lock the door. I'm making a metaphor here, but they did. They had to get people to unwind the hedge book. It was so convoluted. And that was almost 20 years ago. So you can imagine how convoluted things have become since then.
I have another question for you. Safety and Amous, who wrote the book called The Bitcoin Standard, he is now one of the leading voices and thinkers in the Bitcoin space. He was previously in gold, and that's where we first met him. But I saw him down at the Satoshi Roundtable, and he told me that silver is just as bad as an altcoin. He used actually a four-letter word, but we can't use that on air here. What do you say about silver in 2019, but also silver as money? And I know, like I mentioned at the top of the show, you were a test pilot, so you have the nerves of steel to deal with the volatility in silver. Do you believe that he has some sort of truth in what he was saying there?
No, I believe he believes what he said, but I just got through a debate with somebody, and you can look it up on my Twitter feed, about is silver money. Legally, it is. There's no question about it legally, so it is. It's more, is it economically money, and that's where the debate really comes in. But, you know, silver is the money of history. Does that mean it's null and void in 2019? The answer is no. The word for silver and the word money is synonymous in all the Latin languages. And it's moves at the margin. The reason silver moved from the $19 level to the $48 level is because there was monetary or investment demand. And all the qualities that Aristotle purported for money to be fungible, scarce, and everything else applies to gold and silver. And the best stability throughout all of recorded history on the monetary side comes from a bimetallic standard, not a gold-only standard. There's an article I don't have time to go into called Gold is Fiat in Disguise. And the argument is once you go to the gold-only standard and put it into the control of a few bankers, they could go immediately, well, I should say immediately, they could go from that point into the fiat system and cause another monetary problem. So I'm very much still a silver advocate. And even if you don't think it's money and you have that right to think that way, it's a vital asset, just like palladium. And look what the price of palladium has done over the last year.
Right. We wouldn't want to die on a cross of gold. Now, would we, David Morgan? Of course, that's back to the presidential campaign of 1890, I think it was. Check that out in American history. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, David Morgan of themorganreport.com. Until next week, Bye, y'all.